3, 2, 1, it's Shazam!
The podcast that hopes to make itself obsolete.
I'm Kayla.
And I'm Carissa.
And Captain Marvel.
It's great. It is really great.
We saw it.
You saw it twice.
Twice. Let's talk about it.
Kayla.
Hi, Carissa.
You know what's great about this episode?
What's great about this episode?
Is that people are going to tell the difference between our voices because I kind of blew my voice out a little bit, so I sound groggy.
Or do you sound more like me?
Oh, damn it. Oh, no. God damn it.
Who's talking now? Who is this? Who's talking?
All right. Okay. So, Kayla.
This is a fun game. Is that it fun? Only I'm playing with myself. No one is playing this with me, including you.
So no, thanks. I don't want to play. hey, Kayla.
Hi, Carissa.
What have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Today, I had a date with you.
That's exactly what happened.
Literally all we did. So, yeah. This morning, we got together for some coffee, and then we went for, no joke, a couple's massage.
Yeah, that's what happened.
We did. It was supposed to be a foot massage, but it definitely was not.
Yeah.
And it was glorious.
Yeah.
And then we went to a movie and had cold brew coffee.
Yep.
And then we just had dinner.
Oh my God, we had a date.
And we're about to have dessert.
So I really enjoyed dating you, Kayla.
I mean, it's been fine.
Yeah.
Like, let's end it after this, but it's been a fun day.
Came out of nowhere.
Oh.
You're breaking up with me live on the air?
Yes.
Okay, that seems like...
How are you?
It's very on brand for Kayla.
This is very normal. I have nothing else to really report.
I just love that, you know, you texted me and you go, hey, before we go to the movie, because today's episode is about Captain Marvel, so we had to see it. You'd already seen it, but I hadn't seen it. You thought, you know, we should go for foot massages, which sounded great. So we show up, we order a foot massage, and then we get an hour-long full-body massage.
And paid for a foot massage.
And paid the price of a foot massage.
What we're saying is go to this place that's around the corner from my house. I realize that that means nothing to you if you're listening, unless you know where I live, which might be a lot of you.
That's creepy.
Well, they're our friends.
Oh, okay.
I'm assuming that the only people that listen to this are our close friends and my dad.
Yeah, you know from the hundreds of emails we get that that's not true.
That is so true. But I feel like everyone's my friend and everyone's invited to a party. They're not. Please don't come.
Don't touch me.
I'm wearing it.
You're wearing the swag.
I love our swag so much.
Buy our swag.
Buy our swag. A very lovely person posted on our Facebook page the First Then t-shirt.
Yeah.
First I do card tricks, then I smash the patriarchy. And was that the right order?
Yeah.
Okay. And they were like, I don't know who to buy this for. And then immediately after that was them wearing the shirt. And I was like, that's adorable. Thank you for buying that shirt. I should look up who that is because it was just such an adorable post.
That's so cute.
It made me laugh a lot. While I'm looking up who that is, how are you?
I'm great, except for that I blew my voice out doing shows last week. Or I guess, what week is it? Yeah, that was last week. And so I've been kind of, you know, my voice has been recovering.
I think you might be better than that.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to tell them or should I? Also, before you make an announcement, because clearly what I'm doing is way more important. Robert, look at Robert. So Robert, right? Look at, I love the shirt, but have no one to buy it for.
And then
immediately after is Robert wearing the shirt. And
that's
it makes
so
that is really great, Robert.
You
thank
look
you
great
for
in
sharing.
The shirt.
It looks amazing.
Yeah. Well also, done. In the next week, I'm re-releasing all the designs in white. So the black looks great on the t-shirts, but we found that the white that they print on is also really nice and very punchy. So I'm redesigning all the shirts so that you can get them either in the black or in the white design.
Also, if you – I know I posted this and a couple of people have responded, but if you were one of our holiday giveaway friends who won the giveaway, make sure you email us at shazampod@gmail.com because I need to get everybody's email addresses and I can only reach out to you on Facebook in so many ways because we are not friends on Facebook.
Yeah.
So please email us at our email if you won one of our holiday giveaways. And – We have the list of winners, so don't email me telling me you won something.
We know who won.
We know who won. And there was a good week or so that we didn't know who went, who won. So I made that post and was like, everybody email, hoping everyone was going to be honest. But we found the list. So be honest. How are you, Chris?
I'm great.
Do you want to tell everybody?
You tell them.
Guys and friends, no gender here. You probably already know this because I made a post about it on Instagram and our social media, but Carissa was one of the nominees for the Magic Castle Stage Performer of the Year, alongside of Jeff Hobson, Steve Valentine. Well, it was Piff, but now it's Arthur Trace because who knows understands rules anymore. Yeah. And our good friend Lindsay Benner.
Lindsay Benner!
And so, yay, everybody say congrats, Carissa.
Thank you. For that.
Yeah. Everybody said it. Did you hear them?
I did, which is why I said thank you. I mean, Kayla was there when I found out because we were in Las Vegas working on this new project, and I woke up and was very surprised. And Kayla was like, I know. I was like, hey, Kayla, I think I got nominated. And then you went, I know, I've already posted about it on social media. And I went, okay. And then went back to bed. Because I was like, I guess that's the only thing there is to do about it. Was like the two things I was going to do was tell you and post on social media. But you did those things for me. So yep. I didn't have to do it. But I'm very grateful. And also very excited to get to vote for Lindsay Benner because she's been working at the castle for 10 years with this incredibly polished act. And I'm just so excited for her to be nominated. I think she could not be more deserving and, you know, friend of the pod and just all around amazing human being and worked her butt off. And it's just I could not. I'm more happy for her than I've ever been for me about anything.
I'm glad you said that because I'm also going to vote for Lindsay.
Oh, good.
I grew up, like, for a long time. When I was in college, I knew who Lindsay was, and it's just such a great thing for her to – this is the first year a non-magician could be nominated for any award at the castle. They've changed it to include the allied arts. So this is the first time Lindsay or any allied art, like juggling or anything, could have been nominated for an award there, and it's just about time.
Yeah,
for her. She's just been around for so long, and she's so clean and wonderful. And if you've heard if you haven't heard the episode with her, go back and take a listen, because the way that she structures her act, the way she views herself as a performer, the way she cares so much about each and every show, I think is really telling of what a consummate performer she is. I don't know. We could do an entire podcast episode. Well, we kind of already have.
We already have.
About why Lindsay Benner is so great.
So go listen to it. I mean, she's also all the work she's done with women in vaudeville and all the work that she's done in the community. And, you know, just like one of the most, you know, sweet, ethical and brilliant and funny people. When she came over to do the podcast episode and she was like, I'm your fan of us.
No, I sweat too much for that moment.
Yeah, it was. There was so much love in this room. It was so great. And since then, the three of us had breakfast, and it was like it was a 4.5 hour breakfast, and we were being so loud, the people next to us moved.
They were so mad.
They were so mad at how funny we were.
So mad that we were. Well, they were more upset that we were just talking, which is what they kept saying, which was very entertaining. They were mad that we were talking to each other.
Yeah.
Which was just, I don't know, what else do you do at breakfast?
Well, they were a million years old, and I think they were hoping to have a quiet breakfast where they just stared at each other and no one else existed, but instead three hilarious women were being loudly hilarious at them, and they were like, meh. But I'm so grateful to know Lindsay and to count her amongst my friends and to have the opportunity to vote for her. And I mean, I can't I'm convinced that it's her year, but
we're not telling you who to vote for in this. Please, like, we structured this conversation very strategically, which it might have sounded like it was a genuine conversation. It wasn't. We've been talking about it for weeks.
it's a recreation of the exact conversation we had at breakfast when I found out.
That is accurate. We're not telling you to vote for Lindsay. We're just saying.
Aren't we though?
Okay.
I think we kind of.
If Kayla were to speak authentically right now, she would say, go vote. If you have the ability to vote, go vote for Lindsay Benner. It is, but also you might appreciate something else in one of the other performers that you find is more worthy of the award. So I'm not going to be upset if you don't vote for Lindsay. It's, you know, you do what, vote for what you think is the most aesthetically wonderful to you. We just really love Lindsay and are just letting you know that that's what we're doing. And take that how you wish.
And think that after, you know, 10 years of her doing the castle and refining this act and all the hard work she's put in, that she deserves it. Anyway, so today we're talking about...
What a transition.
Is it?
Do you know... I'm going to make a transition. You know what I think about Lindsay Benner is that she's a hero. Maybe like a noble warrior hero. Hey, we saw Captain Marvel today.
On our date day. It's fun seeing a movie that the person you're going to go see it with has already seen. In that you get to react to things all by yourself.
There was also three other people in the theater, basically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I saw this under the worst possible circumstances in that I was like the only person in the theater laughing and screaming and self-high-fiving. But that's how great of a movie it was that I was, you know, there was no mob mentality and I was completely immersed and in love with this movie and just it's so great. And I knew nothing going into it. In fact, at Kayla's recommendation, I didn't look anything up.
Yep.
I didn't watch any trailers. I went in completely cold and it was brilliant because I had a great time, except for that I didn't realize it was going to be 2 hours with a half hour of Marvel previews. So it ended up being a very long.
One of my favorite moment of today, and this is not to, I'm not in any way shaming you for your not knowing a lot about one of the nerdiest things in the world.
You're about to out me. Okay.
Yeah. It was just a really funny moment because it was right out of the gate. Hilarious. So I asked Carissa, what other Marvel movies have you seen? And the number one movie she said was Wonder Woman, which if you know anything about Marvel, that's not Marvel, that's DC. And it was a really funny, just like, right, it wasn't even like, oh yeah, I've seen Spider-Man, Hulk, Wonder Woman. It wasn't any, it was like right out of the gate.
Well, I've seen Wonder Woman. But then Kayla,
great movie.
What, like, listed
no,
a bunch.
Wonder Woman was terrible.
Kayla listed a bunch of Marvel movies and I had actually seen almost every single one you listed. It's just that I don't really retain a lot of information about modern movies is the problem.
The thing is, there is literally no reason that you should retain information about Marvel films. Like, there, I can't think of an actual one. If you're not genuinely invested in them, there's no point in you remembering anything. But what we could learn from specifically Captain Marvel is sort of the same thing that we looked at with Doctor Who, is how magical creatures, specifically magical women, are viewed in pop culture.
Yeah.
And so that's why we went and saw this movie.
It's a magical women episode, women in the media, which is our theme song for these types of episodes, because this is the second one, which means that it's a thing we're going to start doing. I'm sorry I sang.
Keep it in, Jeff.
You stopped it with your eyes.
I said
your
nothing.
Judgy eyes.
I wrote down notes in the in the dark.
In the theater.
Which I think was really fun. So get ready for just, we'll probably, I'm not going to hold back spoilers. So if you haven't seen Captain Marvel yet, by now, I mean, seriously, are you going to even see it? It's been out for 2.5 weeks. If you are going to see it, maybe don't listen to this episode. It's fine. See it and then come back and listen. Because I'm not going to hold back on the information.
Spoiler alert, you have been warned.
Yes.
Spoiler alert.
And go. Basically, what you need to know is Captain Marvel.
Everyone dies.
Literally everyone.
All the characters die.
Right. It's Harry Potter all over again,
friends. Every person dies.
Yes. And they don't come back. It's the end.
I'm sorry. I had to do a bit.
I liked it. Okay. It was going somewhere. Where's our ice cream? Anyway, we have ice cream coming, and that's really what I'm focused on. Mm-hmm. All right. So Captain Marvel, basically, she is a superhero. She somehow has these powers, but she doesn't remember anything past 6 years ago. Then she slowly finds out that 6 years ago she was merely a human, and then she like blew up this thing, and then she got powers, and then she got whatever. So basically, you find out that she's trying to fight for this one side, and then the other side that she thinks is evil actually might not be evil, but they are still evil because that's how the comic books were. And so it's like, oh my God. And then she doesn't have a love interest, which I think is great, but she then finds her own way and takes off the inhibitor, and then she's got mad powers. And then she's like, I'm going to help the once bad guys that aren't bad guys anymore because hashtag not all men. Mm. And then they're, I'm going to help them find a home. You spelled captain wrong. And and then she's like, I'm going to go do this thing. And Nick Fury, oh, you got your eye scratched out by a cat. And then she then gets called back in the last scene because after the snap. Oh, there's a Blockbuster and a Radio Shack because that was great. And then she's like, bam, snap. And then she comes because of the beeper. And that's the movie.
Did you just – how much sugar have you had today?
I've had no sugar.
How much caffeine have you had today?
I've had a lot of caffeine.
Do you need to take a nap?
No.
Okay. All right.
That was a solid synopsis.
Was it? Was that a solid synopsis?
Please. Everybody's seen the movie.
Okay, here's what I like. Everyone who's a fan of the podcast, message us on the Facebook page. And
no, don't message us because I'm not going to read them. Here's what you're going to do.
Yeah, you will read them because I'm going to send them to you.
Do this instead. And I'm going to make a post. By me, I mean Jeff. Could you make a post when this comes out? If you think that was the best synopsis you've ever heard,
give us a little movie.
Of any movie ever. Give us a little heart symbol on the likes. And if you thought it was
incomprehensible garbage, like said to you by a crazy woman,
give us the like symbol.
Just like it.
Yeah.
So either you either love it, which means Kayla's a genius and that was a perfect synopsis, or you like it, which means it was entertaining but ultimately useless.
Yeah. And those are your only two options on how to feel right now. So that's seen the movie. Like, what's the point? There's a Flurkin. Everyone's afraid of the Flurkin. I get it.
A Flurkin is a real thing in this movie. When they said it and then they kept saying it, I'm like, an actor was given a script. All the actors were given scripts that had the word Flurkin in it, and they still accepted this movie. And they should have, because it's a great movie. But Flurkin. Anyway.
But the Flurkin then makes sense, right? Like, you think that it's just a silly, unreasonable thing at first, and then suddenly there's a Flurkin.
Yeah, you realize it's a...
That scratches Nick Fury's eye out.
It's a tentacle monster.
This movie is such a fantastic setup for all other Marvel movies, because you learned so much about everything.
Yeah.
Because it's not just an origin story for Captain Marvel, but it's also an origin story for Nick Fury and the Avengers initiative and like everything, basically. It's setting up a lot, mainly because this took place in the 90s. Mm-hmm. But I think that's it gives you a lot of information.
Yeah. So maybe let's go through it in more of a chronological.
Why? I just did.
Okay.
Fine, if that's what you feel is necessary, but you're going to be shocked with the amount of hearts that this post
gets. I will be shocked. I will be shocked if it gets any. Okay. So so this is set in the past, obviously.
90s.
In the 90s, hence there being a Blockbuster and lots of fun 90s references. And also the music is very well done in that it also communicates to us what the time frame is. And I also found it really interesting that it sort of kind of did what Guardians of the Galaxy did with setting it in the era, but it didn't feel like, oh, they're just doing what Guardians of the Galaxy did. Like, it felt like it was deserved. No? Music?
Oh, yeah. I agree. I think we'll get into this a little bit, but there were a couple of times that I thought the music was too much.
Yeah.
Mainly on a feminist scale. Not necessarily. Yeah. I'm not going to really judge this too much as if it's a good or great movie, because I think there are some things that were pretty, like, hit the nail directly on the head type situation. So some of the scripting choices or some of the everything were a little bit weird, but we'll get more into that when we tackle like the feministness of this movie.
Yeah.
I think it did a good job of not being overkill with the 90s aesthetic, but did a good job of making you feel like you were there.
Yeah.
Which I thought was important. Also, it's funny because Brie Larson, who plays Captain Marvel. So Captain Marvel comes from another planet and she doesn't ever remember living on Earth, and it's Earth is like called C-53, and everybody thinks that Earth is a terrible place and it's very silly. And so her coming in and like landing through a Blockbuster and then breaking into a Radio Shack and wearing grunge and all of that is very entertaining.
Yeah, the Nine Inch Nails t-shirt.
Yeah, playing pinball and all that. It was very much like, oh, yeah, I remember that time.
Remember the 90s? Yeah. Basically, the movie kept going, remember the 90s? Yeah, but did you remember the 90s? Hey, wait, but did you remember the 90s?
Payphones were a thing.
Yeah.
Beepers.
But it was still very playful.
Yeah.
So we open on the Kree's planet of Hala. And Hala? I'm reading this off the internet, so if I say things wrong, this is why I saw the movie.
We're going to go with Hala. They eat a lot of bread, and it's constantly Hanukkah.
Great. And Captain
Hala's a Jewish bread.
I don't. Okay,
that's the reference. That was that joke that just only listen. If you liked that joke, give me a heart on our post.
This is us begging for attention at this point.
No, I just want validation for my synopsis is better than yours. Keep going.
So we meet Verse. And
Veers.
Okay.
You just watched this movie.
I know, but I'm reading off the internet. So we meet Veers and who has amnesia and doesn't remember who she was before she was this particular warrior. And she has nightmares, and so she can't sleep, and so she wakes up her commander to have a play fight. And
that's scene number one.
Scene number one. And in that scene, he tells her to control her feelings. No, don't have emotions. And so this is sort of the first, like, it's a girl. So we have a man and woman physically fighting. It's fairly evenly balanced, although he seems to have kind of the upper hand. But it's fine. Like, he's willing to punch her in the face. And so there's, and in a way, I was kind of like, oh, that's cool. Because they didn't make, so they made her seem like, yep, this is just what's happening. Gender equality, great.
Yeah, it felt. I know that there's been sort of a little bit of debate on the idea of a man telling a woman to not have emotion, which is a regular thing. Like, we hear a lot about how women shouldn't be in politics because they're too emotional, or shouldn't be in certain positions because they have too emotion, blah, blah, blah. Too much emotion, etc. So this is, I think it's an interesting thing because she is being told to suppress her emotion. I would argue, though, that this isn't a gender intention, rather that what's his name? Jude Law's character, Jan Rogue. I would argue that Jan Rogue is not telling her to squash her emotion because she's a woman. I think it's because she is a warrior and they're trying to train her to be a warrior. And warriors, if you have emotion, it can cloud your judgment. Mm-hmm. So I think that she's more being trained for combat and battle and she also has this power attached to emotion. So they're also trying to, as we find out, they're trying to keep that power in major check. Mm-hmm. They know that she could probably be pretty powerful. They give her the little inhibitor on her neck that prevents the power from getting out of control, which then later in the movie we find out that they can actually control that power. They can like shut it off with the inhibitor. So they're constantly trying to suppress her event-given power. Mm. So I don't think it's necessarily about her being a woman, but it is an interesting symbolic trope to visit, because women are constantly being told to suppress emotion and are often by a larger power being told that they – like being, you know, being squashed. Their mm-hmm. power and their identity is being squashed into be one thing. So I think there's a lot of symbolism that exists. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that was his intention, Jan Rogue's intention as in the story. Yeah.
I think also that to me, part of why that I didn't even think about this until you had brought it up after we saw the movie was because I feel like Jan Rogue is telling her to control her ability, mm-hmm. and control her power. And then it's the artificial intelligence, the AI that, you know, the supreme being who's like the commander of the Kree, who is the one that references emotion for the first time. So yeah, the Kree are telling her to suppress her emotion, but I don't really feel like that came from Jan Rogue. Mm-hmm. So I was mostly cool with that. I didn't think that was such a big deal. Plus also, we're going to get into, you know, who are the bad guys in this and sort of this overall theme of identity and who are you? Who are you? Who are you? You have amnesia? Anytime you see a movie where it starts with, like, you have amnesia, the theme is going to be, who are you?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think this movie is a lot more about an identity crisis mm-hmm. Than it is about anything else. Because the
the Skrull are going through it as well. They're constantly morphing their identities. She obviously has amnesia and doesn't remember who she is. But then I would also argue that, like, the Kree kind of never know who they are. They're just being ruled by a supreme intelligence. Mm-hmm. So they're just doing whatever the supreme intelligence tells them to do. So, like, what's their real purpose? Is it war? Is it taking over the world? Like, we don't really learn what their intentions are except for whatever the supreme intelligence tells them to do. Mm-hmm. So they're going through it. There's, like, a lot of identity searching in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, the Kree's sort of battle cry is for all Kree. Yeah. So we see this thing of, like, the community over the individual, which is very interesting when you get into a, like, finding out who you are kind of narrative where it's like, okay, so she comes from a place where it's you know, the community over the individual, and then we're going to move towards Earth where it's more about, you know, individuals, especially in something like an Avengers series where it's basically a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Whereas it isn't like an army coming to get you. It's a bunch of powerful individuals. And so you mentioned the Skrull. You mentioned the
Skrull.
The Skrull. I said it right, and then yeah. I questioned myself. You mentioned the Skrull. Who are the Skrull, Kayla? What happened?
So the Skrull, from the beginning of the film, as well as from basically everything else that exists in Marvel, the Skrull are the bad guys. Mm-hmm. They are shapeshifters, so once they see another being, they can shapeshift into that being down to the DNA, so they can, even if you took a DNA swab, it would match. The only thing they can't do is replicate, like, long-term memories. So they only have the ability to understand some shorter-term memory for whomever they replicate. So the Skrull are basically trying to – what we think where they're trying to take over planet by planet. But what we learn is that some of the Skrull, we meet Talos, who seems to – be their leader, but maybe not. Talos and one of the other Skrull, the science guy. I don't remember if he has a name or not. I do know that he dies. So
spoilers.
I'm gonna call him the science guy.
So the dead science guy.
The dead science guy. So Talos, that's a terrible Bill Nye spinoff. Yeah. it was a really funny joke, and then it got dark.
Oh, I just love him so much. The idea of him ever not existing makes me sad.
It's not going to happen. AI will be developed so that he will never die.
Good.
So we have Talos and his science guy, the Skrull. They come to Captain Marvel, and they have information to tell Captain Marvel who she really is. She's not Veers from Hala. She's Carol Danvers. She was a human. She flew planes at a time where women weren't really able to fly planes, so like the 80s, basically the late 80s. You know, she had this accident with her captain that gave her these powers. And then the Skrull, Talos and the science guy, they are trying to find this thing that will give them enough power to escape the war and go find a planet to live peacefully. Mm-hmm. Or so they say. As far as we know, he's telling the truth, because that's where the movie ends.
So basically now she's on the other side. So, you know, we see her transition from the Kree community, which is all everybody working to support the community, individualism, meh. Then we see her working with the Skrull, who are shapeshifters, where not only does individuality matter, but in the individual can be replicated. Mm-hmm. And where, again, anytime you get to shapeshifter, it reinforces the narrative of who am I? Because you could be anyone. And then are you your memories, or are you what you look like? Or, you know, all this is getting called into question. And so, they have information on her. They have the black box recording. And then she switches sides to help them find this laboratory, which is an orbit around the Earth.
I think another interesting thing about her change in allegiance is not only about what she thinks is right, which is clearly what's going on, is she finds out information that supports Talos's goal of trying to just, like, what she thought was right. So basically her commander, Mar-Vell, was most likely trying to help the Kree, or help the Skrull free the Kree in the war. Mm-hmm. And that definitely gets proven throughout the time. So she finds out that information. But what I found really – with the change of allegiance there, with the Kree, they were trying to make Carol Danvers into something that she was not. They were trying to make her into a warrior with these suppressed powers and into this character of Veers and all of this stuff, whereas the Skrull were giving her the information for her to be who she was exactly and not – take anything, like they were giving her the information so that she could be unapologetically herself. Mm-hmm. So obviously her allegiance could go with the people that she felt accepted her more. So I thought that was an interesting thing too, is that she was more interested in helping the people that helped her be herself.
Yeah.
And then gain the power to be badass.
Yeah. So a part of what we loved about this movie is
everything.
Just everything. It was a really well constructed movie. And there are some really fun choices that make this a wonderful feminist film, which is particularly relevant to the world of magic because this is a magical female character. And anytime you see a woman in a narrative who has magical powers, it's interesting to see the way the story treats her. Often women in narratives who have magical powers have either been witches, which is like bad witches, or oracles, where they're these beautiful ethereal creatures that can't do nothing. They're there to inform the hero. Whereas this is a magical creature that is simultaneously a hero. Mm-hmm. So often when you see magical women, they're paired up with a male hero character. And this is the female magic hero, an all-in-one super being, and it's phenomenal. And also, anytime you give a female character this sort of magical powers, we then add a whole new layer of women with power. And so we can glean a lot about what the writers think of women with power. And one of my favorite moments in this is at the very end, she's fighting Yanrogue, and it's a parallel scene to the opening scene where they're fighting, and he tells her to control her powers and that she will be his equal when she learns to take him without her powers. And so then he repeats that, and then she uses her powers to blast
photon
him.
Photon blast!
Photon blast! And then, you know, walks back up to him and says, I don't need to prove anything to you.
Yeah.
Which is such a great moment, both narratively, but also like a moment in a movie, a feminist moment in a movie that isn't too heavy-handed, that also understands feminism. Because often you see, or just gender equality at all. I mean, often you see moments like this in movies that are, you know, just slap you over the head with it, or they're just too ridiculous, or they say the word girl power. They're just not subtle in any way. And this was a true character moment that felt very deserved, that was also like, hell yeah, sister.
Yep.
High five.
It's also in that scene as well. There's an exact replica of when Mar-Vell's craft was taken down with Carol Danvers flying when it crashes sort of into the water and then into the land, and all everything goes and it slides across the land. When Yanrogue's plane crashes, it's the same thing. Yeah. So it's a great callback to the beginning of basically like being taken down and then taking down the taker down.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
That felt like a real sentence.
It was great. There's another really powerful moment in it where, you know, she is told she's human. She's told, oh, you're only human.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see this montage of all the times when she was a kid and then, you know, when her plane crashed, that she got back up.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a powerful visual moment. It's so earned and so simple. And again, this great, powerful moment that doesn't slap you over the head with it. It's so well done and so authentic to the narrative. And we see and that's also part of this theme of identity. Who am I? We have amnesia and we have shapeshifters, all these things that reinforce the theme of who am I. And then we see her get back up when she's told what she is, which is human, which is the part of her identity. And then she decides what that means for her, and being human means always getting back up, which is so cool. Yeah, Captain Marvel. Yeah, I'm getting excited.
It was great. I wrote down some notes. because it was dark and I felt that that was the right thing to do. Yeah, I wrote down the I have nothing to prove to you line, which I thought was great. There's also a great – oh, we should talk about Maria Rambeau.
Oh, absolutely.
Because – so there's a really interesting dynamic that exists between the women in the movie. So – other women that are in the movie, they're not really the main characters. They're like a subplot character, or not even a subplot character. You have Maria Rambeau, who's Carol Danvers' slash Mrs. Captain Marvel's best friend on Earth. And then you have
Mar-Vell.
Wait for it. You have Monica Rambeau, who is Maria Rambeau's daughter. There is no apparently there is no guy in the picture. It's their family, and it's never mentioned, and it's never a problem, and there's never an identity crisis because there isn't a dad, and like none of that exists. I'm not saying that that's how it is in the real world. I'm just saying in the movie they are never made to feel like they are less because there isn't a man, a husband or a dad in their life.
And we also see like Maria Rambeau gets to be cool and awesome and also a mom in the same way that this girl that we meet gets to be cool and awesome and also a loving dad. So we see that relationship paralleled. We get to see two cool parents who are also hardcore and awesome and are good at being parents, or like loving, wonderful parents from of different genders, and they're not portrayed differently, which is really nice.
Yeah. Then you also see there's the Minerva, who's the other warrior in the Kree, or the other female warrior in the Kree. And there's a great scene at the end where Captain Marvel is like, you knew the whole time. Is this why we didn't get along? And Minerva just says, no, I just don't like you, which I think is great. It actually has sort of the two – it parallels two different – female relationships, but also shows that they can, you could have female relationships are not cut and dry. A lot of people think that either you have to 100% support each other, like you basically have the leader and then the followers telling the leader that they can do, like Mean Girls, or you have the catty enemies. And in this, you had in Minerva to Captain Marvel, you had a teammate that you didn't get along with, but you still had to work together to accomplish a goal, war. And then you also had a best friend who was not 100% in support of you, but was your best friend. And so it wasn't like, you can do no wrong, best friend. It wasn't that type of female friendship trope. It was more like, I'm not really like, you know, we're on the same, we have a lot of the same goals, but we're just friends having a good time and I support you. And I thought that it was cool to sort of see neither of the normal female friendship tropes that exist.
Yeah. They were realistic really female friendships. Those are just how female friendships look.
Yep.
And that's also how male friendships look, because there's less difference than people think.
Yep.
And then also just the idea of the Supreme Intelligence, who's representing Wendy Lawson.
Yeah.
The Dr. Wendy Lawson character. We see this powerful, intelligent female scientist kind of character. So that's also really nice, is that basically we have these three primary characters, the best friend, Captain Marvel herself, and then her kind of goal person, her mentor who becomes kind of like the through line and the main driving force. We see these sort of three interesting female characters. None of them have love interests.
Yep.
And none of them have a love interest subplot of it having been something bad happened and that has motivated their journey. Like, none of their journeys are motivated by someone who left them or they love or something, you know, which was sort of one of the things I found frustrating about Wonder Woman.
Yep.
Was it's basically like, I've never seen a guy before. Oh, now I see a guy. I love you. Did we need this? I mean, I guess so. Maybe.
I wrote down in my notes to compare the two movies. Here's one of the problems that I have comparing the two movies, is that I think it could potentially do more harm than good, because to compare two movies with a female lead is like, well, which one's better? There can only be one.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I don't want to do that. However, I think a lot of credit was misplaced in giving Wonder Woman the like hardcore feminist cookies. The world gave the Wonder Woman movie a lot of feminist cookies.
It was like a feminist ice cream sandwich. It was like, wait, yeah, this is the one movie that
I
did it.
I would not have given it a feminist carrot stick. I was really, the movie Wonder Woman really bothered me, as I've gone on a rant before, but one, because I'm obsessed with the Linda Carter television series.
Yeah.
So knowing the quality, even the feminist quality that exists in that series I think it's really strong, and I will go to bat for any episode that television series is hugely feminist.
Yeah.
And I thought the movie, not to any fault to the writer, because I know that she worked really hard in getting certain scenes in, but to the fault of the movie, the final product, the movie barely has there aren't other women in it except for Paradise Island, and they are seen one time in the whole movie.
Yeah, there's like the secretary character.
Yeah, but I don't even, is she named in the movie? Yeah. I don't remember. Anyway, but she's not a friend or
not
like,
well featured.
No, and their conversations do not talk about something that isn't like clothes, makeup, or a guy.
Yeah.
So there's a huge makeover montage. I hate – like makeover montages in female-centered movies are the immediate indication to me that this isn't a feminist movie. Because if you're saying, oh, a woman now finally has identity because she had a makeover, you have a problem. And that's exactly what happened in Wonder Woman. She always had to be saved by a man, and all of her motivation had to do with a love interest.
Yeah.
So as much as I understand that it was pretty awesome to finally have a woman – as the center of a superhero movie and busting through and you know, fighting and doing all this stuff and like running across the field of bullets, I totally understand why. And it was very wonderful for me to see as well, to be like, finally, a movie that makes sense to me. In terms of feminist power, I think there was a lot of misplaced feminist power given to Wonder Woman when it should have been given to Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not comparing the two movies. I'm not saying there should only be one. I'm saying you might enjoy Wonder Woman more than you do Captain Marvel, especially like Wonder Woman is much more – there are a lot more fight scenes, a lot more CGI, a lot more of all of that. You might prefer that over Captain Marvel. I totally get it. You might prefer DC over Marvel. I understand. Just – purely off of like a feminist scale, I don't think Captain Marvel is getting enough attention on that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this is why, is because Captain Marvel does it in an effortless way. It feels effortless.
Yeah.
It feels like, of course there's no love interests of any kind for any of the female characters. Of course, like 90% mm-hmm. of it passes the Bechdel test. Of course there's no makeover montage. Of course, you know, she gets to be self-empowered and have her own goals in it for it to be about her identity. And of course we get to see, you know, motherhood portrayed in this really cool way with this really cool character. And of course, it just feels so of course. There's only a few times when you're like, oh, come on.
Mainly the music choice.
Having
No Doubt.
I'm Just a Girl song playing during one of the scenes was a bit like, okay.
Some of it is a little bit, like I said before, I hit the nail on the head. Like a couple of the quotes were some guy going like, how about you give me a smile, honey? Or like, you know what they call it, a cockpit? Like all those lines are pretty hit the nail on the head. However, we were saying this before, I've lost count how many times I've been told to give someone a smile. Smile, honey. You'd be prettier if you smiled more. All of the time.
Why do you want something from me I'm not willing to give you? Oh, because it's not about smiling. It's about power.
Right.
Stop it.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's – and it's very accurate. It was maybe just a little bit over the top, but also I get it because it happens regularly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I found really interesting about this movie in relation to the magic world is that this is a woman who just happens – to be like, this is a character who's powerful, who's magical, who just happens to be a woman. And this is kind of what we've been talking about, is that sometimes you're a Wonder Woman character and your femininity becomes a big part of your identity, and it becomes how you create your work or how you create your jokes or where your power comes from. What was wonderful about seeing this Captain Marvel movie was that she was never not feminine. But it also wasn't overly sexual or sexualized really in any way.
None.
She just got to be strong and powerful and magical and really feminine and effortless, which is also an option. So I'm starting to feel like we're living in a culture where there are more magical women tropes to turn to. Like this character, think about the characters we've covered, is this character and Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. These are both effortless, feminine, magical, powerful women.
You do also have Wonder Woman in that mix, I think. It's a very different part of the femininity scale, and one that I'd argue with a little bit, because it is a little bit more reliant on how men view her. It's the movie specifically, not Wonder Woman the character, but specifically the portrayal of the movie in the movie. But I think that's a trope that does exist in magic. A little bit sexy. I mean, Wonder Woman in the movie is quite sexy, but still strong and still very much badass. I think you could definitely argue that she is another point on the scale of looking at magical creatures that exist in present day.
Yeah, I think we are at a time where you can start looking to film and television and literature for different female magical archetypes as a woman creating a magic act. Because, you know, one of the things Kayla and I have talked about in the past is that part of the difficulty for women is that we don't have a lot of archetypes. We don't have a lot of examples to pull from. And that's changing. But it's important to recognize that you don't just have to pull from the world of magic. In fact, sometimes you can create something more interesting or more specific or more what you want to do by pulling little bits from a bunch of different characters. And so we just wanted to expand people's understanding of what a magical creature looks like. Captain Marvel is very much a powerful female magical creature that you could pull some information from character-wise to create your own identity as a magician.
I have two other things that I thought this movie pinpointed that relate to magic. One is, we've said this a lot, the like hashtag not all men situation. Yeah. And I think that the Skrull are a really good example of that, where the Skrull are known pretty much throughout the Marvel universe as pretty terrible creatures. They could shapeshift, they're evil, they kill people, etc.
They can't be trusted.
But that's not always the situation. And when we meet Talos and we find out that his goal is to save his family and find a place to survive. And then you meet all the families and all the non-warriors. You find out that they might not all be bad. Maybe this will change in another movie, but just looking at Captain Marvel, they're not all terrible, and they're willing to, they're going to support Captain Marvel because she can help them too. And I think that's also a really good thing, is like supporting women within the magic community can help you as a performer and magic as a whole as well. So that was maybe a little bit of a stretch for a symbolism. But like, that's, as soon as that happened, I was like, oh yeah, hashtag not all men. Sometimes men are great. A lot of times men are great.
Often.
Most of the time. It just so happens that the bad is bad. Yeah. So I thought that was a really interesting thing. The other thing is, there was a moment where Talos was in the plane with Maria Rambeau, Captain Marvel, and Nick Fury, aka Samuel L. Jackson, and there were no snakes on this plane. I love that movie so much. What a terrible movie. It was so great. There's a moment where they keep asking, Maria Rambeau asks how the shapeshifting works, and so Talos gives them sort of a little crash course, and then somebody says, can you shapeshift into a cat? How about a filing cabinet? And then Nick Fury says, I'll give you $50 to become a Venus flytrap right now. And all I can think of is, how often does someone find out that we're a magician and then go, can you make my wife disappear? Can you make this disappear? Could you give me a lot of money? Do a card trick. Requests. And I was like, I get you, Talos. Yeah. In this moment,
is exactly the way magicians react. You're like, haha, please stop it. And also even the way he talks about his abilities, where, you know, it's exactly the conversation you have as a magician, where it's like, hey, can anyone do that? And he's just like, well, yeah, technically everyone has the ability, but I would argue that there's like some skill involved. And you're just like, yes, that's also magic, you guys. That's also magic.
I love it so much. Yeah. That was a great scene for magicians.
It was a great scene. Also, just, I love the cat.
Oh, of course. The Flerken is obviously the highlight of the movie. The Flerken
is wonderful.
Yeah.
I kept waiting for that. I'm just like, why is there a cat in this whole movie? Oh, because it's the best. Because
it's a Flerken and it eats the Tesseract.
The best.
And so, then the Tesseract's back. Oh, can I say one thing real fast? Just a fun fact about this movie is that I'm looking at so this was co-directed by Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck.
Okay.
One half of the directing team, female. This was written, the screenplay was written by Anna Boden, Ryan Fleck, and Geneva Robertson Dworet. I'm sorry if I said that wrong. That's two-thirds of the screenplay written by women. And then five of the story by credits, Nicole Perlman, Meg LaFauve. That's a fun name. Anna Boden, Ryan Fleck, and Geneva Robertson Dworet. That's five writers, four of them women. So it makes me really happy to know that not only was this so primarily the writing staff, primarily female, but also it was co-directed by a woman. And I should look up Ryan Fleck. Let's see what else Ryan Fleck has done.
But this is just what we've been saying all along. You know, you want to write interesting female characters, bring in interesting women to help write them. I don't understand why so much film and television is trying to be, you know, to create a sense of gender equality or to have these really interesting, well-rounded characters, and then they have all middle-aged white guys on the writing staff. If you want to make a difference, it starts by including people who are different.
Well, it's also you – I cannot write from the perspective of a man or somebody that's not white or somebody who had to learn a new language because of the country they moved to. Mm-hmm. I still live in the same country I was born in. You know, there are a lot of perspectives that I, as Kayla, cannot write from. And therefore, I don't ask that anyone write on my behalf and from my perspective unless you ask me about it. Mm-hmm. And even then, like, you better ask me a lot of questions and spend a lot of time learning before you write from my perspective. So when there's a group of guys making decisions on behalf – and this happens a lot in magic. A bunch of men are making decisions on behalf of the women in magic community. Mm-hmm. I have a really large problem with that because you have absolutely no – you can hear – what's wrong, but you can't understand what's wrong because you're not fighting the daily battle that we're fighting. I'm also not fighting the same battles that that group of men is fighting. And so I can't help them. I can't understand their perspective. All I can do is encourage them to fight for the things they believe in. But you also then can't expect me to you can't expect to understand my struggle.
Yeah.
So if you're going to write a female, you know, empowered movie, you should probably get some women on your staff.
Yeah. Well-intentioned action is not enough. Well-intentioned effective action is almost enough.
Do you remember our friend we got an email from? We read it once on an episode where he was like, I really want to write for strong women, but I also, it's hard to bring in women to the point because like I don't know any women that could do it, and I'm being given the opportunity. And it was like, yeah, keep going, because eventually you are going to be given the opportunity and you are going to meet women to bring in.
Yeah.
And you just have to keep doing that. And I think that that's what it is. It's like, if you're not in a position of power to bring somebody in, you are always in a position of power to support. And so you just keep supporting until you are in a position of power to make an actual physical change.
Yeah, this movie would not exist if there wasn't, you know, wonderful men being wonderful advocates mm-hmm. for powerful, smart women. And then also, you know, men just being advocates who are happy to work alongside smart, powerful women. So we love this movie. We think it's doing a lot of the things right, most of the things right. Mm-hmm. And we hope you'll watch it and sort of consider what things that this movie does well that you can internalize and bring into your own work or into your own life. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, you're already part of the solution.
Yay.
So hashtag part of the solution.
There's also I was looking up Ryan Fleck, who's the co-director and one of the writers of Captain Marvel. And I just wanted to know, like, has he done a lot of other work with female empowerment movies or whatever? And I didn't see – I'm not familiar with a lot of his work, so I won't comment on whether or not something is or isn't. But he collaborates a lot with Anna Boden, who is the other co-writer of Captain Marvel. But he has a great quote that I will now read to you. This is on IMDb under his page. And it says, I'd like to think my films leave you with the idea that people are becoming more aware of the world. You have to hope, right? Which I think is a great thing. Like, he gets it. So he's, like, on a team that's like, oh, we're going to fix this. And I think Captain Marvel is a very, very, very large step in the way of fixing movies to be more equal.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is, I mean, cut this, but yeah, hell yeah.
Don't cut it. It's lovely.
No, I just, you know, this was my authentic reaction of like, you know, I was very excited watching this and seeing how this movie felt like we've come a long way as a culture and how so much of it felt effortless. Not all of it, but so much of it felt effortless in the portrayal of motherhood and the portrayal of strong women and the portrayal of femininity and the portrayal of identity. There was no
love interest for anyone.
It was great.
I mean, if there was a love interest, it already existed, which was Talos and his family. But that's not – that might have motivated him, which actually you had said this earlier, but his story was much more of the story you see of a woman who's like, I've lost my family. I'm going to do anything to find them.
I need to find my family.
Right. Which was really a very interesting parallel there. But there wasn't – no one was motivated by love or lust or anything. It was 100% motivated by identity, self-empowerment, badassery.
Yeah. Go see it, you guys. And vote for Lindsay. Vote for Lindsay. And go on to the Shazam Facebook page and give us a like if you thought Kayla's original description of this movie was incomprehensible. And that what was that about?
I think it was perfect. If you already saw the movie.
The other thing is that you know, Kayla and I really enjoy doing these women in the media episodes about movies and TV. This is our second one. And if this is something you enjoy that you think is valuable, let us know because we can keep doing it. Or if you're like, hey, you guys are just talking about movies. And also there's already a podcast that does that.
There are a lot of podcasts that talk about movies and also Marvel movies.
But if you like feminism in movies, you should listen.
There's a couple podcasts about that too.
Specifically the Bechdel cast that we're obsessed with.
Yeah, a lot.
Bechdel cast. Anyway.
We're going to eventually have to pay them rights on that song. We also should give a quick shout out to Away Luggage.
Not sponsored yet.
But there might be a little bit of a thing, which is maybe one of the founders of it are listening. I'll tell you that story in a minute.
What?
So if that's true, hey. We love your luggage.
And we're obsessed with you guys.
And we use your luggage literally every single day.
It's the only luggage we use.
I've got the day pack. I really want the backpack, but it keeps going out of sale, out of stock.
We both have three pieces of Away luggage.
And my dad loved it so much at the store that he bought one.
Yeah. Not sponsored, but don't need to be because we're obsessed.
But go get some Away luggage. If you travel one for one day a year or you need a backpack, like go away.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
That's the next t-shirt. We have a Don't Touch Me t-shirt. The next one's just go away. Hashtag Shazam.
But we meant the luggage. Go get Away luggage. But we're not sponsored. But we are, however...
sponsored by the IBM. Thank you, IBM.
Thank you, IBM. In part by the endowment fund. Is that what we're supposed to say?
Yeah, there's like a thing that goes on the end. But, you know.
Great.
Whether or not
I don't remember what it is.
We want to genuinely thank the IBM for their support. We recently got to go to Las Vegas and do a huge research project. And we only had to fund half of that out of pocket because the IBM's sponsorship. So we're really, really grateful to them for their support of this podcast and for research into the world of women in magic, the history of women in magic.
We've got a really – we've kind of touched upon a couple of the more larger projects we're working on right now while also still working on the podcast. But the two projects that we are diving into extensively are very important to us and we think will make a huge footprint on the history of women in magic but also moving forward. It's going to be a really big leap because I think it will be – everything will be a little bit more put into perspective.
Yeah.
There will be a lot of hard data information. There will be a lot of hard data information. There's going to be a lot of stories, a lot of things that we didn't even know. We learned a lot on this trip to Las Vegas. And it was really intense because we were exhausted by the end of it. But
14-hour days.
14-hour days for 2.5 days. And so it was pretty tiring. But I think it's going to be really important moving forward. So those are going to take some time because they are so extensive. And this isn't something that we can necessarily shell out to helpers.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone who's offered to help with the data entry. We will be getting back to you shortly once we figure out what exactly we need from you, because that is a thing we need to do.
Yeah, we didn't realize that asking other people to do data entry was going to basically be its own little project because we'd have to figure out how to manage that and how to make sure that the work isn't doubling up. So once we figure out how to sort of work on that system, we will be definitely needing help to do data entry as for the ridiculously extensive project. We do already have well over 2,000 data points and some initial numbers, and they're just shocking. Yeah, and I can't wait to release some of the initial findings.
Speaking of Las Vegas, if I'm going to say this, don't get all stalkery and feel like you need to put in a lot of effort on this, please. If anyone has a very natural and easy way to contact Melinda Sachs, we would really appreciate it. Again, we don't want to bombard her with Shazam requests. We tried to reach out to her. We just don't know if she got the messages, because we did it in such weird roundabout ways that we can't guarantee she received our message.
Or even knows that, you know, why we're interested in talking to her. This is the woman that was billed as the First Lady of Magic, who is, you know, is such an important part of the history of women in magic in Las Vegas. And we really would love to include her in this upcoming project, as well as if you have any playbills or anything relating to the history of women in magic in Las Vegas. It would be really valuable. One of the things we noticed when we were there doing research is that, you know, once a building is torn down, the history goes with it. And so it was very hard for us to track down real information and, you know, dates and times and playbills and posters and images. And we talked to lots of people who'd seen these shows, and those are great accounts, but anything concrete that we can get would be really valuable. So anything you can do to help us with our research into the history of women in Las Vegas.
If you've got something physical and can take a picture of it and email it to us, that would be preferred. That'd be ideal. Especially if you've got like, oh, I saw like Melinda perform or Arian Black perform or any of that. If you saw anybody performing in Las Vegas and have a ticket stub or anything that you could send a picture of us, send a picture to us, that would be really appreciative. Basically, I think we've kind of given away our project at this point. But
really? Have we?
Without going too much into it, because we really don't quite know how this is going to shape out yet. We've just got a lot of information to really delve through. We are doing a special on the history of women in magic in Las Vegas, and giving a lot of credit where credit is due to the amazing women that have been performing in Las Vegas for
20-30 years.
We've said like 10 years or more. And that doesn't mean just in a showroom, but that also means the corporate market and trade shows and all of that. And so we've got these amazing interviews, but they are in depth and interesting and have perspectives that we didn't think about before. So I think it's going to be a really fun couple. It'll be a multi-part series, but it's going to be really fun, and we're excited to show you. But we're still compiling the information, and therefore if anybody has information or a story to share, we're looking for like hard concrete evidence at this point about like when people were in what showrooms,
at what hotels.
Yep. So, and the internet is not helpful in this research because really, as soon as you said, I'm just reiterating, but basically as soon as a building doesn't exist, it never existed.
Yeah.
Except for the video compilation of when buildings get demolished. And that's really, it's been really shocking to see how quickly people are gone off the internet. So it's important to us to make sure we get this research right. So if you have any information, it'd be really appreciated.
Yeah. One of the things that Kayla and I realized is that, you know, women have existed in magic throughout history. And lately, like, we're seeing the Del Odell book and, you know, the George Magnet book and all these wonderful books about the women who have made magic what it is today and finally getting the credit that they deserve. And we want to be part of that work to unearth this sort of secret buried history. And when we started digging into it, we realized some of the most forgotten things are the things that happened in Las Vegas, because it's such an ephemeral place. It's such a place where you go, you see something, and then, you know, the it gets erased, because mm-hmm. it's all about being in the moment, being present. But the work that those women have done and the doors that they've opened for the rest of us are a big deal. And we just want to give them credit where credit is due.
Yay.
Also, vote for Lindsay Benner. Yay. Yay. Okay, great.
Ice cream?
Yeah, so we're getting ice cream. Thank you very much.
There it is.
I'm so tired. Thank you so much for joining us on this very special episode of Shazam. And remember,
we're going to go eat ice cream.
And vote for Lindsay Benner. Bye!
Vote for Lindsay Benner if you feel she's the best person to vote for. We are voting for Lindsay Benner and therefore would encourage you to also do the same. But if you disagree and you like another performer better, we encourage you to vote as an independent human being that has their own thought processes, and you can do whatever you think is best. We're just letting you know what we're doing because we want to be transparent in our thoughts and feelings. Because I don't know if you've noticed that from the beginning, but we've kind of just done that continuously. Like, we talk about why women are bad at magic. There's a whole episode on that. If you haven't heard it, you should listen to it. I imagine by now Jeff has started to fade out. I'm hoping anyway. Oh, but sometimes Jeff just commits and just lets me talk for a long time. So basically this ice cream we're getting, it's not only vegan. It's called Not a Moo. It mm-hmm. only exists in Los Angeles
yeah.
At the Gelson's. And it's so good. It's made of coconut milk and it's creamy. It. It's not too coconutty, which is great. And it also is made with agave, and which means it's not really sugar. It's like a better, no more natural kind of sugary.
Because of cactuses.
It's cat, right. It's I'll cactus. Take it. I like plants. And I'm just really excited about this. So it's about to show up, which means that I gotta go.
Yeah.
And Carissa's gotta go.
We gotta go.
And I'm just really excited to eat this ice cream, but also feminism.
This podcast is funded in part through support from the Endowment and Development Fund of the International Brotherhood of Magicians. Thank you so much for helping us out, you guys. We really appreciate it.